I'm going to talk about two big trends in American life over the last 50 or 60 years, the decline of institutional Christianity and the growing polarization of our politics.
Ross Douthat of the New York Times talking about his presentation at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
The increasingly strident division between an ideological left and an ideological right. And I'm going to argue that Christianity has weakened precisely because people have become more likely to identify with ideologies than with religious beliefs, and that a recovered Christianity, a more robust public religious faith, is actually an answer to polarization because it gives people an identity that's bigger than partisanship, so they can define themselves as Christians first and liberals or conservatives second.
You can meet and hear Ross Douthat at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, June 7th and 8th in Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org. What in the world does the world do with hundreds of thousands of refugees? Now, there are refugees from all kinds of situations in the world. War produces refugees. Bad government produces refugees. Famine and natural disaster produce refugees. What if the producer of these refugees is ISIS and the dislocation of ISIS, which has been a goal of the United States military strategy against this Islamic force for evil in the world for a long time? With that success comes these tens of thousands of refugees. And why don't countries want to take them in? Is there a solution to this, or is there at least a lesson to learn from all of this about the place of militant Islam in the world? Joining us to talk about the humanitarian crisis of Islamic State refugees, Robert Spencer, a regular guest, director of Jihad Watch, and author of several books on Islam, including his latest, The History of Jihad from Muhammad to ISIS. Robert, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Always great to be here, Todd. Thank you.
What was your initial reaction to the Washington Post story on the Islamic State's refugees are facing a humanitarian calamity? What was your reaction?
It's a terrible situation, but unfortunately, it was kind of unavoidable, because what you've got is a large concentration of people who are essentially at war with the rest of the world. And now they have lost their last stronghold. Nobody really wants to take them in, because you're going to be taking in an unknowable number of very dangerous people, of jihad terrorists, along with the people who genuinely need help. And so it's a tremendous dilemma. There's no real easy solution to it. And it was a long time coming. Obviously, when the Islamic State started to lose territory, this was inevitable. And now it's come about with none of the powers of the world really having made any provision for it.
Why was no provision made for this? Why didn't they anticipate? Warfare always produces refugees. Why those neighboring countries did not anticipate this?
It's a particularly difficult situation because of the nature of ISIS itself, of the Islamic State. Turkey and Syria and Iraq and all the rest of them, none of them want to deal with this group, and none of them want to deal with the people who are in it. They know that it's essentially a ticking time bomb if they allow people who are refugees from ISIS to come into the country. And so they've just been essentially turning a blind eye to the situation and hoping that somebody else would take care of it.
Are they concerned that individual terrorists or that ISIS would attempt to set up shop elsewhere?
Yes, that's a very real concern, because in the first place, you've already got it happening. In the Philippines, there's an ISIS stronghold. Bangladesh, Libya, various other places, Nigeria, there's a faction of Boko Haram that is still allied with ISIS. And so in the first place, it's not dead as a group. It's just lost its territory in Iraq and Syria. And so it's very possible that you could have refugees. Remember also, Todd, in connection with this, that as far back as 2015, when ISIS controlled a substantial expanse of territory in Iraq and Syria, they were saying they were going to infiltrate the refugee stream into Europe. And so the possibility that they could send jihadis among the refugees into the neighboring countries or into Europe again is very real.
Why was it important for ISIS, both tactically and theologically, that they hold territory?
Well, it was the caliphate. And the caliphate is, according to Sunni Islamic theology, the only legitimate government to which Muslims anywhere in the world owe allegiance. Now, that's never been the case throughout history that all Muslims have been united under the rule of a caliphate, but it's very important to the jihad groups that they restore the caliphate because they consider it to be the center, the linchpin of Islamic unity and the source of the ability of the Islamic world to carry the jihad even more virulently to the West. And so it's the goal of jihad groups all over the world, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Boko Haram, all of them, they all want to restore the caliphate, which was abolished by the secular Turkish government back in 1924. And ISIS actually succeeded in doing it. But it's essential to the success of such a claim that you actually hold territory. The caliphate is, by its very nature, a political entity.
In kind of Christian parlance, is this an eschatological goal of Islam?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely, yes. The idea is to unite all of the world under the rule of the caliph, the successor of Muhammad as the military, political, and spiritual leader of the Muslims, to subjugate the non-Muslims under their rule, denying them basic rights. And then the end of the world will come when the end times will begin, when Jesus, the Muslim prophet, comes back and breaks all the crosses and essentially abolishes the state of subjugation under which the Christians have been living, and it forces the Islamization or death, the choice of Islamization or death upon everyone. And that is the herald of the last judgment.
If this were a little group, I'm thinking about the Branch Davidians or groups like that that have arisen within the United States, if it was a group like that that had eschatological goals that would be considered dangerous and destructive, I think the U.S. government, at least internally, would be extremely alarmed and want to deal with it. Why the acquiescence when it's quite clear that there are eschatological goals on a global scale for entities like ISIS?
Well, it's gotten very complicated. Nobody really wants to admit it, but when you come down to it, ISIS, when it was governing territory, didn't govern it in any way that was significantly different from how Saudi Arabia or Iran or any other Sharia entity governs. And consequently, it creates a difficult situation for the government of the United States and other governments, because after all, we're allied with Saudi Arabia. And so how can we say ISIS is terrible and Saudi Arabia is not, if we start talking about Sharia itself, the implementation of Islamic law? And so there's really just everybody is ignoring this problem and its implications and hoping that it will just go away. But the reality is that the United States government is allied with various Islamic entities, so it doesn't want to confront Islam or acknowledge the Islamic roots of jihad terrorism. And yet at the same time, for its very survival, it has to fight groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda.
The Washington Post story deals with the reaction of the United Nations. As far as you can tell, what does the United Nations fail to understand about the situation?
Well, the United Nations, of course, is dominated by the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, which is 57 Muslim governments around the world. It's the largest voting bloc at the UN since the demise of the Soviet Union and the Soviet bloc. And so the United Nations is never going to discuss the issues that are salient about ISIS in any effective way. And when they're dealing with this humanitarian crisis, they likewise cannot go to these governments and say, we understand why you don't want to take these people in because of the Islamic Jihad imperative, because the United Nations is never going to discuss the Islamic Jihad imperative in any effective or honest way. To do so would be to offend the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, and that's never going to happen from the UN. So what you're going to get are futile appeals by the UN to neighboring governments and probably to the West as well to take in these people without any recognition of why they would be reluctant to do so.
It's also mentioned that non-governmental organizations are hesitant to offer help. Why do you think that is, Robert?
Same thing. The jihad imperative is universal. And so it's not as if you can be part of some NGO and go into the areas where ISIS refugees are congregated and expect to be safe. You might be end up being a target of jihad yourself. And so the NGOs don't want any part of this either.
How do you expect this to work out eventually? What needs to happen?
Todd, you really got me on that. I don't know how this is going to work out because I don't see how any of these governments can give and allow these people back in, that would be dangerous to the point of suicidal. There are among these people those who are extremely dangerous individuals, and any government would be foolish in the extreme to let them in, and you cannot distinguish between those who are very dangerous and those that are not. And so I think maybe the only thing that could be done is something like what's been done for the Palestinian refugees, so-called, under very different circumstances, where refugee camps have been established that have been in operation now for decades. And it may be that that's the only alternative, but that in itself is a dangerous option and not a very good one, because then those places might end up being breeding grounds for jihad activity themselves.
You said earlier that ISIS is not dead. They simply have been dislocated, I think is probably the fair way of describing this. Is there a real possibility that ISIS could reform and reestablish some kind of a territorial beachhead someplace?
Yes, that's very possible. It could happen in Nigeria, could happen in the Philippines, could happen in Libya, and it could happen elsewhere. It just depends on the willingness of the local authorities and whatever national authorities are available in these areas to smash them. I mean, this was the attempt, remember, last year in the Philippines itself. ISIS was essentially attempting to relocate its caliphate in Mindanao, the southern Philippines. And the Philippine government came down upon them very hard, but this was an extensive military operation that was required. And I wouldn't be in the least surprised if it were not the last one.
I'm curious if it appears to you that our State Department understands the possibility of an Indonesian, perhaps a Philippine threat of, I think they'd probably call it a new ISIS, but the old ISIS simply relocating there.
I hope they do. The problem with the State Department is that it's full of Obama holdovers who believe that Islam is a religion of peace that has nothing whatsoever to do with terrorism. And that tends to make them myopic about various terror threats that they refuse to accept could possibly be happening. And there are far too many of such people in the State Department. But certainly there have been some indications in the past that the State Department is aware of what's going on in the Philippines on an ongoing basis. And so I hope that that is an indication of more awareness than they're letting on.
Given the fact that this is, as you have said, kind of a no-win situation with respect to these tens of thousands of refugees, not all of which are ISIS agents, but mixed in, what's the lesson, apart from solution, what's the lesson that we ought to be learning about the humanitarian crisis created by ISIS?
Well, I guess that we have to take the aspirations for the caliphate seriously. We have to not allow these kinds of groups to amass territory in the future. And we have to take these groups themselves very seriously and understand that they're not the kind of group that's going to say, we are defeated and give up. They consider themselves to be fighting a 1,400-year-old war, and they will pass that war on to their children and grandchildren. The sooner we become aware of that and take realistic measures to deal with it, the better off we'll be.
Robert Spencer is director of Jihad Watch and author of several books on Islam, including his latest, The History of Jihad from Muhammad to ISIS. You'll find a link to Jihad Watch, and you can purchase The History of Jihad from Muhammad to ISIS at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Robert, thanks for your time.
Pleasure always, Todd. Thank you.
There is a downright crazy story in the St. Louis media that has implications more broadly for society. A St. Louis radio personality pays a compliment to an old friend and then resigns. We'll talk about it with Rebecca Curtis after this. If you appreciate Issues Etc., talk radio for the thinking Christian, and Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Emmanuel Press is a Lutheran-owned business in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in operation since 2004. That's 15 years of publishing liturgical and devotional books, 15 years of collaborating with Lutheran authors, artists, and translators. Thanks to our loyal customers and Issues Etc., we look forward to many more years of confessing and teaching the Christian faith. Visit us online at emmanuelpress.us, E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L, press.us.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.